session number 23195, reel 9.
Mr. Bolton, reel 9. To continue, what happened while you were at Austerwick, or how long were you there? What's the next thing that happened?
We spent some time there, in a very quiet way, doing very little. But the one thing which we became very much aware of was the fact that we were on the route of flying bombs being fired at Antwerp. And these passed over with great regularity, not far away from above our heads, in one camp where we were placed.
Did you know what they were?
We did know all about them, yes, because we first became aware of them when we were in Normandy, although we didn't see any there. Of course, we heard what was going on at home, which was rather alarming. So I think these were the first we actually saw.
Did any of them drop short?
Yes. Several seemed to drop short. We never actually saw them crash, but they came down nearby with a loud explosion. So we soon became accustomed to them and took no notice of them. But they were quite nice to see at night. They flew over with their flames streaming out of the back, and you could see them on the way. Had a small touch of excitement to our rather dull life at that point. And we presumed that Antwerp was being knocked about quite a bit. Then, on another occasion, about 10 o'clock one morning, we heard an extremely loud, although distant, explosion, which sounded slightly different from anything we'd ever heard until then. That, apparently, as we sort of learnt later, was a V-2 rocket, which, of course, had got on the wrong trajectory and had fallen short. But that was the only time we came across rockets. Now, I was fortunate enough at that point to get some leave, actually leave home, because they had instituted home leave about that time.
When would this be? What month would it be? December?
Yeah, December. That's right, this was late in December. And
what do you remember of your leave?
I remember going. We were put up, two or three of us, including artillery chaps, were put into a vehicle 1500 weight, and were driven to a railhead and put on a train, which would take us to Calais. And the weather was very cold at that time of year, of course, in the cold part of the world. So we got into the train. I found myself in a compartment with about seven or eight others, sort of crammed in fairly tightly. In a train which had Italian coaches. Because, of course, the railways had been in total disarray and been bombed heavily all over France and Belgium and so on. And they were then just about reorganized and running trains, but it was always a rather slow business. Trains crawled along. We passed over bridges which had obviously been rebuilt, rather like glorified Bailey bridges. So it was a fairly long journey. But anyway, when we got in the train, the first thing we realized was it was very, very cold. There was no heat on. So we investigated, and we found a handle which obviously controlled the heating. And it moved from one side, which was caldo, to the other side, which was freddo. So caldo and freddo were the two Italian words. So my mates and I did a rapid bit of thinking and arrived at the obvious conclusion. Caldo, that's cold. Freddo, that's hot. So I shoved it on freddo, and I shoved it on freddo. Nothing happened whatsoever. And so we said, well, that's typical of the army. Expect us to travel on a long journey, overnight too. And not a bit of heating. So we did our best to snuggle up and keep ourselves warm with greatcoats and whatever else we could. It was an extremely uncomfortable journey. The train stopped and started, and every time it stopped we woke up, and it was very cold. And we finally arrived stiff and weary somewhere around Calais next morning. I got up to stretch my legs. These were in compartments, so I opened the compartment door and looked in next door, opened their door to say hello to them. A tremendous fog came out of their compartment, real heat. And then, of course, we all discovered that caldo meant hot in Italian. And freddo was to be definitely cold. And,
so you'd switched it off?
And we'd switched it off, and we spent the night in extreme discomfort. Quite unnecessarily, rather stupidly, I think, looking back. Yes. Anyway, we disembarked somewhere. I can't remember much about it. I think we were taken across the channel on a ferry and made my way home. Well, that was very nice. First leave for a long time, and good to see the family.
What did you spend your evenings doing? I mean, did you go out a lot or did you stay home?
I think I went out once or twice to theatres, went to the cinema probably. Mostly stayed at home and rather enjoyed the luxuries of nice sleeping between sheets and plenty of food. So that was a very pleasant interlude. And I duly returned on... what I remember next was on the way back to the unit. First of all, the trip on the train, and I think it was overnight once more, and the next day arrived at the railhead. The scores of other returning people returning from leave, all sorts of units, all mixed up, naturally. And we were instructed to wait until we heard a unit title called, which meant that the truck had come from the unit to pick us up. So trucks started to arrive, and we waited quite a long time, and I seem to remember at the time we began almost to cherish hopes that ours wouldn't turn up at all. That would be nice. I can't think why, because not much future in being stranded in that sort of remote depot. However, whatever hopes we cherished, they were dashed. The vehicle finally turned up, one of our artillery trucks. And we were driven back to the unit. Now, this was New Year's Day. And New Year's Day was the day when the Luftwaffe made its last great effort to assert its will in the skies. And we discovered that as we were driving along. We just crossed a Bailey Bridge, or in the middle of a Bailey Bridge over a canal. There was a tremendous roar of aeroplane engines, and I looked up, and to our astonishment, there were planes with black crosses on them flying in a sort of rough formation about 50 feet above our heads, which nearly jumped out of our skin. No time to do anything or think of anything, but one thing which imprinted itself indelibly on my memory was the sight of a red cap, a military policeman, who was on duty at the bridge, at the end of the bridge, just in front of us as we were driving towards him, who unbuttoned his holster, pulled out a pistol, pointed it at the plane, now whizzing away, and opened fire. What a wonderful gesture of defiance. Would never have hit anything with that. So that was one incident I remember. Rather well. Well, for some little while at that time, we'd had a fairly quiet time in the regiment. The rapid advance meant that we were always stuck behind. And now came the time when things became static. The army held positions along the rivers, the River Maas, etc. For a few weeks anyway, life got fairly quiet. There was a certain amount of activity, and shells did fly around a bit, but not very much.
So still at Oysterwick?
We were near Oysterwick, that's right. Probably a mile or two from the River Maas, where our front line positions were. It was a pretty wide river. It's much too big an obstacle to encourage any sort of patrol activity across it or any minor attacks. So things, as I say, became quite quiet. We'd hear occasional bursts of machine gun fire or Spandau from the Germans out in the front. And at night time there would be flares going up and there was suspected activity. And otherwise it was quiet. Then the Ardennes offensive erupted a long way to the south of us.
That would have been a little early. That was December.
Yes. Yes, I think it finished about Christmas Day, so just
that
before.
That was before you went on leave.
That's right, it's before I went on leave. Yes, I've forgotten that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That gave us some slight cause for concern, because up to then we were all coasting along steadily, everything had gone well, and we assumed we were on the way to Berlin. We still felt we were, but clearly there was a hiccup. And we wanted to stand by, and there was some talk about being moved to take part, to support the second army, but never actually came to anything, and things started to quieten down again, and I went off and had my leave and returned, and as I've just explained, back to the unit in January.
And things carried on pretty much the same?
Things carried on much the same for a time. The weather became appallingly cold, it was slow, and whereas in Normandy we'd had great trouble with thick layers of dust on the roads and so on. Here and back up in Holland, we had lots of trouble with slush, ice and snow. And the roads were quite tricky. It was intensely cold. At night, we managed to find billets in farm buildings. The sort of general landscape had not been so much knocked about as we'd been accustomed to back in Normandy, where it was all fought over endlessly. And we were now in country which had been captured rapidly and with relatively little fighting. So quite a lot of buildings and villages were more or less intact. So things proceeded fairly quietly. It began to hot up again, and then the army started to push forward towards the big river barriers. I remember a place called... in fact, we had actually moved into Germany about then. And I remember a place called Goch, which was much fought over. So that was knocked about quite a bit.
The Goch was actually in Germany?
That was in Germany, yes. Not very far within the border, a few kilometres, I think. So from now on, we're in Germany. We were issued with orders forbidding fraternization with any German civilians. That was strictly out of order.
How did that affect, you know, I mean, how did that actually work in practice?
To begin with, we hardly saw any civilians anyway. It was in the nature of the place very well, usually somewhere in the country, in the depths of the landscape. When we did see a few, generally speaking, we looked over our shoulder to make sure there was no officer in sight, and then had a little chat. Now, I'd learned German at school as well as French, so naturally I was keen to try my German. So I did try a bit of surreptitious chatting. And the civilians we met, they were all women or children. But by that time, the entire male population of the Reich had been conscripted and everything.
Were they reasonably friendly?
Yes, but they were rather scared. Very careful what they said and watched us closely. That was entirely new to us, being quite unlike the master race that we've been fighting. It never occurred to us that we could scare civilians. Anyway, we more or less made friends with them. And then, especially with the children, because you were actually allowed, you weren't forbidden to talk to the children. It's up to a sort of reasonable age. And I remember at one place, we had a little tenting camp there in tents. And I think I may be shooting ahead to after the war had actually ended.
Okay, we'll do that first.
Yeah.
So what was actually happening while you were moving forward? Was it just for you much the same routine, I presume?
That's right. I remember a little about where we were going and where we stopped. We simply edged forward, following the army, and the guns doing quite a bit of firing, until we finally arrived at the River Rhine. We stopped short ourselves about a mile or two away from it on some rather high ground, and then paused, but started a lot of intensive firing. Big fire plans were coming up from HQ, no doubt, and we did a lot of firing. So that was going on, firing taking place night and day, big troop movements visible all around, and clearly we were going to cross the Rhine. And then came the fateful day. When we heard a distant roar of aero engines, which grew louder and louder, and finally a huge armada of planes appeared, mainly Dakotas, and literally hundreds were flying over us, some bombers too, and fighter escorts, and disappearing on the far side. We couldn't see the dropping zone because they were very low, the planes were low, and there were, you know, the ground obstacles got in our way, so couldn't see them. But one rather dreadful thing happened as we were watching them flying over. One glider started weaving to and fro, and then the tow rope parted, and it went into a dive, and then it literally fell to pieces. It actually disintegrated totally. Great showers of bits of paper came floating down upon us. It was evidently the wings must have been covered with a kind of waterproof paper. But we saw, as all the shower came down, we saw a black object falling very rapidly, and we thought it was a Bren carrier or something like that. And behind it, more dots, which were, of course, the crew. And once they all hit the ground, I suppose, with a frightful wallop. And that was the end of them. We didn't see them crash. That was, again, hidden from our view. We just saw the few seconds only, disintegration of the glider and the rapid descent of its contents, which has always remained in my memory, rather unpleasant. But, we then saw all this armada coming back, slightly different route. We saw it flying back, and this time all the Dakotas were passing by with all their parachute ripcords trailing out of the open doors. And several of them showed signs of having been hit by AK-AK and bits knocked out of them or holes in them. Several of them had smoking engines. Probably be lucky to get back home. So that was a tremendous event. We heard all the roaring of the sort of explosions of the bombs. That was clearly audible. Distant signs of a lot of smoke going up. I think we were somewhere near a place called Wesel on the other side of the Rhine. And then very soon after that, we up sticks and crossed the Rhine.
What's your memory of that? Did you go across the pontoon bridge?
Yes, the big pontoon bridge.
What was that like?
Oh, it was fine. Of course, we'd had quite a lot of experience of crossing pontoon bridges all the way on our journey from France up to Germany. Most bridges had been destroyed on the way, so we crossed numerous Bailey bridges and pontoon bridges, doing a very big run over the River Seine. That was, I think, the biggest I saw.
So this didn't intimidate you?
Oh, no, not a bit, no. That was quite all right. We just sat in the back of the trucks and peered out and admired the view. Enjoyed the view. And we took about 10 minutes to rattle over the bridge. Right. From now on, the pace of events quickened very rapidly, and the army was moving forward at such a speed that we were left behind, and we were trailing behind with our guns until we came to a point where we sort of caught up and did some firing. A lot of fierce fighting was going on, but this was mainly infantry, and became very mobile. And my memories of just exactly what we were doing each day got rather blurred, and I can remember rather little about it. Until quite a short time after that, we actually came to the end of the road. The word came back to us and in our field, wherever we were, that things were about to end. And then quite suddenly it was announced that the war had ended, or I think we were told it was going to end in a couple of hours' time or something like that.
Were there any V-Day celebrations?
Well, yes, there were. Yeah. Everything went deadly quiet, of course. Then all of a sudden at the 0 hour when the war actually ended, there was a great outburst of firing. And every anti-aircraft gun within miles was banging away. And there's Beaufort's guns firing, and there's a lot of small arms fire too, all of which we assumed was celebration. And we hoped it was, anyway. Indeed it was.
And what about yourselves?
Well, we didn't celebrate very much. I think probably on instructions from Army HQ, we were given a tot of rum, which is our celebration.
How did you feel about, about the end of the war?
Well,
or that part of the war?
It wasn't all that exciting because things had really got quite close. It was obvious that it was going to happen by then, once all the furore of the Rhine crossing had got behind us and the subsequent advance. And whatever signs we could observe all indicated a very rapid German retreat and very little fighting. In fact, by an irony, the houses and villages and farms we passed, were on the whole very little damaged. And Germany, as we saw it, had been taken much less punishment than every other country we've been through up to then.
And where did we settle after the V-Day? Whereabouts, which part did you occupy?
We moved steadily forward, following the army. The army had been making for Hamburg, and I think we got pretty close. We'd actually fired on targets in that area, northern Germany. And we finished up in a town, or near a town, called Oldenburg. Oldenburg, smallish town. Now I struggle to remember the sequence of events. First of all, we embarked on some duties. We became responsible for policing a smallish area, which meant basically keeping an eye on displaced persons, because one of the features of the end of the war period was that thousands and thousands of forced labourers and displaced persons, occupants of prison camps and heaven knows what, had all got themselves freed and started to try and make their way home, back to Holland, Belgium, France, whatever.
So what were you actually doing with the displaced... Was there a displaced persons camp in the area, or was it just...
I think there were camps hastily set up in the area, that's right. And of course we were also hearing, we got the news by then of the concentration camps, places like Belsen being in that sort of general area. And we began to hear about the horrifying news. I can't remember feeling very strongly about all that. I think it sort of news came filtering through and we didn't quite get hold of the full reality of it. And that was only later I became aware of the atrocities which had been going on there.
So, how long were you in the Oldenburg area?
I think for a matter of about 3 weeks, not very long, as far as I myself was concerned. The first thing we started doing was patrolling the area. So
Were you on these patrols?
Yes.
What would one of them be like?
No question of any communications. All we did was maintain signal office, always, being the hub of the paperwork. But I just was put into a jeep with another operator, two of us, and a driver. And we were allocated a German policeman. And ours was a 6-foot-tall, rather fat character. He was wearing his police uniform. And he sat in with us. I think there were only four of us in the jeep as we went out on these patrols. That was myself, our driver, Lance Corporal. That's one of my Lance Corporals. And the German policeman, so the four of us. And we had a little area in which we toured around.
And what were you looking for or doing?
We were mostly looking for trouble from displaced persons. Because these were now roaming about, not surprisingly, were breaking into premises and stealing whatever they fancied and being generally nasty. Getting their own back, I suppose, to a degree. Mm-hmm. So we were charged with following them. I don't think very much happened, really. Our sort of presence may have done a little good in the area. But I do remember on one occasion we were called to a farm. I'm just trying to remember how we were called to it. So I don't remember. I don't think we had the wireless net going. I don't know. Maybe we were called in somewhere at some liaison point and were instructed to go to this farm where DPs were causing trouble. And so we arrived at the farm and got out of the vehicle and went across. And we sort of semi-arrested three or four displaced persons who were being a nuisance, apparently. Listened to the story of the German lady on the spot.
And what have the displaced persons have been doing?
Thieving, I think. What they were stealing, I'm not quite sure. But, anything. Anyway, what happened next was our German policeman interrogated the displaced person. I was obviously being nasty to them, bawling at them. He then belted one or two of them around the face, which rather shocked us. We looked at the Lance Corporal and we thought, what do we do? And we decided nothing. That was really the end of the incident. I think we sort of chased these characters away and we resumed our patrol. But it was very unpleasant. Oh, and the other thing, I've forgotten this, yeah. A British officer appeared out of nowhere. I think he must have had a jeep and sort of joined our little party. We went to do this interrogation. And he did the same thing as the German policeman. In fact, now I come to think of it, I think it was this character who we understood to be on secondment from a police force in the UK. I suppose they sent them over to help in the business of policing the German areas which are now occupied by us. And here it was who did the face slapping. So we didn't like him much. But of course, he had some authority, so I don't know. But I mention it only because it was an incident, a little anecdote. Fairly typical, I suppose, of what was going on all around. Mm-hmm. Well, we did this perhaps, I think, only about a fortnight. I was going around on these little patrols and quite enjoyed that. It was quite a nice life and pretty well uneventful. And the next thing was that the younger members of the section were pulled out and told we were going home. And you all know where you're going, of course, they said. You're being going home and you'll be sent off to Japan. Which, of course, we realised was probably an unpleasant fate.
You were worried about that?
We were a bit worried about it, yes. By then, we should have been used to being in action. We'd seen enough of it. But the thought of going to Japan was not at all pleasing. One thing, it was a very long way away. And secondly, of course, the reputation of the Japanese was ferocious.
So what happened? The draft of younger ones were put
Yes,
in.
We put that in the back of our mind, and as a draft, we were then pulled out and sent back to England. So let me just try and think about the journey home. Went by vehicle, by a truck, 3-ton truck, I think, right down to, I remember being arriving in Bruges. I think in Bruges there was some kind of staging camp there where we spent a night. And then the following day, went from Bruges to, I think to Ostend.
And this would be in late May?
This was, yes, that's right, late May, yes. Uh-huh. Yes, the war ended about May the 8th, I think, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. So it must have been late May, beginning of June. Right.
So what happened?
I'm really not quite sure at this stage whether I'm right about Ostend or whether, in fact, we were driven back into France up to Calais. I think we went back to Calais, because I seem to remember our crossing when it came. It was quite a short one, and very rough. The weather was very bad, and we bounced up and down. That's one occasion on the sea trips in my whole life, actually. I began to feel seasick. And I think if the trip had lasted another 10 minutes, I would have would have been down in the latrines. But we arrived and I got off it just in time to save the contents of my stomach.
Where did you go?
We're now back in England. We were entrained and finally got out of the trains to Doncaster and was driven to the local race course where some kind of staging camp existed. For the benefit of some thousands of people like ourselves who are in the state of limbo, having left our unit and awaiting future postings. We were there for a very short time. We did a certain amount of things like handing in unwanted kit and getting fresh clothing where necessary, smartening ourselves up a bit. We were then sent off on 28 days disembarkation leave. So, a big pause in my career at that point, my army career.